Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ted Santos, and I am your co-host for The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you live every single Thursday at 7 o'clock, and we do a podcast. We talk about business, your business, the business you have, you would love to have, the business you work in. And we talk about all the things that are important to you for business, the challenges, whether it's COVID or not COVID. We talk about leadership, project management, finance, health. We've even had doctors to talk about your health. We talk about the law. We cover many topics. And just as a side, if there's ever a topic you'd like us to cover, and we will do as we always do, we invite a guest who has expertise in that topic, we encourage you to drop us a line wherever you can find myself and my co-host. So before we introduce our guest, because you know every week we do have a guest, before we introduce our guest, you have to know I never take this journey alone. Lori, let them know you're in the house.
So hello, everyone. It's so nice to be back. I've been traveling a little bit, and I think I just landed. So glad you're still listening to us. We have a great guest tonight, John Dinkelmeyer from Heritage Harbor Associates. So I'm happy to announce John. And John, if you could tell people a little bit about you, introduce yourself, and yeah, and what makes you you, and run? How do you run your business, and what you want to do every day when you wake up?
Well, first off, thanks so much for having me on the show. My name is John Dinkelmeyer. I'm a financial advisor with Heritage Harbor Financial. We are located on the North Shore of Long Island in Port Jefferson. And, I guess where do you guys want me to start specifically?
Anywhere. So what made you want to go into finance?
It's actually kind of a pivot. So I started my studies thinking I was going to be teaching freshman, sophomore year college history. I went to school to teach history. I did pretty well in my undergraduate. I graduated from Charleston Southern University in 2006. Got my master's from Norwich Military Academy in 2010, and I had the luck of finishing my graduate work while we were still recovering from the recession. So coming out of that, it was pretty difficult to find a teaching job. The SUNY system had pretty much frozen all teaching positions. They weren't really doing any hiring at all. And at that point, I'd been a client for a few years of a local financial firm on Long Island. So I started looking into that. They made me an offer, and now we are just about 8 years later. I have a practice on the East End, and I do all sorts of things for all sorts of people. I work with individuals and also with groups. We specialize in different forms of investments, short-term, mid-term, long-term, retirement planning, college funding, and insurance strategies. We use life insurance and long-term care to help out with all different kinds of financial planning.
Pretty awesome. And Heritage Harbor Associates, is that your company partner? Like, how do you fit in?
So we're an independent firm. One thing that makes us a little bit different than a lot of other companies or a lot of other firms is we're completely independent. So instead of being attached to a Nationwide or New York Life or Massachusetts Mutual or anything like that, the broker-dealer that we're attached to doesn't even put out their own products. So when we sit down with clients, we can work with any company that we want to, which gives us a kind of a unique advantage. We can tailor whatever products are available industry-wide instead of kind of being limited to just one or two or three different companies. The firm itself is a family-run firm, definitely on the smaller side. We do a lot of work together. We do work individually, and, you know, it's really kind of got a nice family feel to it.
That's super nice. So as, I guess, as a business owner or as part of your duties on what you do on a daily basis, how do you bring in, like, because our audience is all business owners, right? Or at least we think they're business owners or want to be business owners or are thinking about being a business owner. So, you know, doing what you do, you have to bring in clients, you have to market yourself, you have to do social media, you have to think about, you know, what's important for the client. So what are some of the things you do to kind of make yourself stand out or?
So my approach is, I guess, a little bit unique. Like I'd mentioned before, I started off as a client. So when I'm sitting down with my clients, one of the first things I think about is how would I have reacted when I was on the other side of the table? What did my advisor, when I was just a client, what are the things that he did that made me uncomfortable or things that he did that I really, really liked? And I try and integrate that into everything that I do with clients. You know, it's something that we were all brought up thinking, you know, think of other people first or how would you feel if this was said to you? But it's something that should be done in business as well. There is sometimes a little bit of a negative connotation that goes along with financial services because there are some people that are very salesy, very pushy and, you know, product-centric. And that's something that I've tried to make sure was never a part of my practice. So when I'm sitting down with a client, first off, I want to make sure they're as comfortable as possible. And taking my original educational background and putting that into the way I run my appointments is something else I think that might make me stand out a little bit. So I'm still educating people, just instead of teaching, you know, maybe a class on Western Civ 1 or Western Civ 2 or Ancient Greece and Rome, now I'm teaching my clients how the various financial products work and what the advantages and disadvantages are for each one. So I guess I'll give you a little bit of an example. Let's say, for instance, I have a client comes in and they have an old 401k that they have, you know, that they want to know what their options are. What should they do with it? Should they roll it over? Should they leave it where it is? And my approach will be to go through the various options that the client has. You know, maybe they have three or four, maybe even five different options on what they can do with it. And I'll go through step by step the pros and cons of each one of those options. And then the client can make an educated decision for themselves. You know, it's a little more time consuming, but I think it's definitely worth spending that time with the client. And it brokers trust with them because now they have a much better handle on what's happening with their own money. So they can make an educated decision. And at the end of the day, I'm licensed to do all of it anyway. It really doesn't make a difference to me. But instead of, you know, trying to run the appointment in a way to focus on one product or another because that's what the company I work for is training me to push, that's not the situation with my firm. We don't have anything in particular that we get paid more to push or anything like that. So it really doesn't matter. Once again, what's the most important is the client understands what all of their options are. And then obviously, you know, they can ask questions. And that's one of the biggest part of my appointments. You know, I said to people before that you have 2 ears and one mouth. So you should do twice as much listening as talking, right?
Right, always. So
that's a big part of financial planning, you know. Each client is completely different from the next. You know, the client that I have at 10 o'clock might be completely and totally different and have very different goals than the client that I have at 1 o'clock. And that's why there are so many different kinds of products out there, because there's no cookie-cutter approach. Mm-hmm. There isn't one product that's right for everybody. So that's where the questions come in. You know, what is most important to that client? What is their objective for this meeting? Where do they want to see themselves in the next year or two? You know, there's different parts of each client's financial life, and just leading them through each segment of it and helping them understand where they need to be and what they can do to get there, that's all part of my job. And it really does come down to planning, and planning can only be achieved through listening.
Right. Right. Very important. And how do you go about getting clients? Because, you know, it's really hard to sit in an office and kind of be like, okay, you know, everybody's going to come to me. And, you know, so you know, you rely on word of mouth, still need more than just that.
Yeah, client acquisition is got to be still the largest challenge, I think, to most advisors. And to maybe a large portion of businesses in general. So in financial services, things have changed dramatically. I look at the partners at my firm who are my mentors, and they started their practices in the 80s. And back then, you could literally open up a phone book and just start calling people. You know, there was no call ID. You know, people all had a landline. They picked up the phone when the phone rang. And obviously in 2021, things are much, much different than that. So cold calling is a thing of the past, in my opinion. It's an archaic way of doing business. In my opinion, the best way to build your practice is through word of mouth. And to do that, the most, I guess, the best way to do that is to set up what we call centers of influence. So you're making these alliances with other professionals that are like-minded individuals, you know, people that live up to your own standards for how you treat your own clients. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've done. I've built up this inner circle of other professionals, and that's something that I make sure every one of my clients understands. I tell every single one of my clients when I meet with them that I'm the hub of a very large wheel. So, you know, I'm doing their investment planning or their insurance or whatever it is. But if they need somebody in another industry, if they didn't already have someone and they were just going to go on Facebook and ask for a recommendation, or they were going to ask Google, I tell them to ask me first, because my network has gotten pretty big. And a referral, in my opinion, is the largest compliment that you can give another professional. That's a big piece of trust that you're handing to someone else. So I treat my clients like family. Some of my clients are family. So for me to send them to somebody else, I'm not going to do that to just anyone. So kind of put everyone that's in my network through a rather rigorous process of meeting them, getting to know them. At the end of the day, it's all about relationship building, and that's both with building up these centers of influence and also with my own clients. Relationship building is the most important part of business. But yeah, that's, that's how I get the majority of my clients. It's all through referrals. You know, I don't, you know, we have a beautiful state-of-the-art website, right? And we have a beautiful building on a heavily trafficked road in Port Jefferson. But it's, you know, you don't have walk-in business like you did 15 or 20 years ago. You know, everybody looks online, and there's only so much you can do in social media, because social media has become so saturated with advertising. So there's the word of mouth and the old-fashioned way of referrals, in my opinion, is still the best way to do things. Because, listen, if you have a great CPA and you're trusting them to do your taxes, and you don't have a financial planner, you don't have an attorney, you don't have whatever it is, and they refer one to you, you're probably going to take that number and call that person, because you already have this relationship with the CPA. So, you know, it's the same thing works with me. That's the best way to build up business, and to me, that's the best way to acquire clients.
And speaking of numbers, if anyone would like to call in and ask John questions, have a conversation with him, you can call 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. And this is live, so you can call him in and ask whatever you like when it comes to financial planning. So, John, it sounds like you've taken quite a journey. So you started out wanting to be a teacher. And, you know, the first show Lori and I did here is we talked about transferable skills, and it sounds like that you've done that. You've transferred some skills from being a teacher. And, you know, when you talk about your what makes you unique, you've also, so not only being a teacher, you've also sat on the other side of the table as a client. And I don't know if that is the majority of financial planners have actually been in that position before they started. So two questions. One is, how do you think teaching has helped you do your job better and to differentiate yourself from others?
That's the first. Is there a second question? Or are you going to ask the first one first?
Second question is, how do you think being a client helped you? And how does that, and you may have answered it, but how does that allow you, you were talking about relationships, how do you think that allows you to develop better relationships because you actually have been in their shoes?
All right, so the first question about, you know, where I think there may be some advantage to having been a teacher first, I think that any good teacher knows that every student learns differently, right? Some people are really good in the classroom situation and love seeing things written down on a chalkboard or on a whiteboard, and some don't. You know, some people learn very, very differently. So that's something that I've taken and used with my own clients, and it's just understanding that every person, every client is so different. And it's not just their financial situation. I mean, you know, there's some things that you do with every single client. If we're talking about some kind of an investment, then every single client we're taking through a risk tolerance questionnaire, which determines, you know, how we should start looking at the portfolio structure, how aggressive or conservative or you know, moderate, which is in between, we should start allocating their investment. And that's something we do with everyone, you know. But then there's other parts of the appointment that are tailor-made to each client, and that's based on their personality. You know, there's some clients that are really good with a half-hour appointment. You know, they're in and out. They grasp everything. They have a crazy schedule. And, you know, you're just another thing on their calendar for the day. And then you have other clients that that's all they're doing that day, and they really want to sit down and spend a lot of time with you. And they, you know, that's where I have appointments that go 2 hours, maybe 2 hours plus. Every client is so different. You know, I offer an annual review to every single one of my clients. Once again, you have the client that's good with that once a year. Hey, you know, let's get together. Let's look over whatever it is. You know, maybe we wrote a life insurance policy a year or two ago. Maybe we rolled over a retirement account. Maybe we started, you know, a college funding plan. Or maybe it's even with a business that I started a retirement plan for all of the employees there. And they might be very, very happy just with meeting once a year. Okay, John, see you next year. And then I have other clients that they text me once a month, maybe even more often than that. That's part of the relationship building process, and it's one of my favorite parts of the business because you meet people that you would have never met before, and a lot of these relationships turn into friendships. I'm a really, really big hockey fan, so I have a couple of clients that are also really big hockey fans, and we'll be texting each other throughout the course of the year about, you know, stuff that has nothing to do with the assets that I'm managing for them. It's all about, you know, did you hear about this guy that got traded? What do you think is going to happen with the draft? You know, you hear about this coach got hired over there. So it's being able to, A, be a human, and B, understand that every client not only has different needs, but different desires out of the relationship itself. And part of that is sometimes not overstepping, because just because you have one client that likes to talk all the time, maybe there's other clients that you need to just, you know, give them their space and call them once a year, every 6 months, whatever it is, and that's all they need. So that's what a lot of the teaching experience brings. It's understanding the differences in personalities. Like I said, there's a lot of things that need to be done the same way with each client. You know, the basics of financial planning, we all start with asking the same questions. You know, if I sit down with a client and one of the first things that I'll ask them is, what is the most important thing that you want to get out of this appointment today? You know, what is the one thing that's bothering you? It's keeping you up at night. It's, you know, adding stress to your life. Let's alleviate that first. Then after that, the questions can change dramatically. So you just kind of follow along and we'll go down each avenue as you get there. And it's, to me, every single one of my clients is a long-term relationship. I make sure that my practice is not transactional. And when you develop these relationships, and they're meant to be long-term, you know, there doesn't have to be this feeling of need to have everything done all at once because, you know, it's meant to be a long-term relationship. So that's another thing that I stress with my clients. Obviously, if they have a, you know, they have something that needs to be done right away, of course, we'll get it done right away. Or if there's a glaring hole in their plan, that something will patch up immediately. But a lot of times clients will come in and they want to, you know, they want to build Rome in that one day. And it doesn't have to be that way when you're working with someone that understands, hey, this is the start of a long journey that we're going to do together. So,
I think that's the
first part.
Okay. So it sounds like you, some clients are extremely savvy. Maybe they've worked with a financial planner in the past, and they know exactly what they want, right? And so you're letting them know, hey, this is, we can give you that, and I have these other options that you may or may not have known. So there's a teaching component, and you have other clients who, as you said, you may have a meeting that goes more than 2 hours. And it sounds like you are playing somewhat of a role of a teacher, because you have different products based on how they respond to certain questions or a questionnaire that you distribute.
Yeah, so that's one of the advantages to being a truly independent firm. We have access to every company that's out there. The financial services industry is incredibly competitive. I often relate it to the auto industry. So every single year, Honda puts out a new Civic. But it's never the same exact car. Now, maybe the basic parts are going to be the same, and every couple of years they might do a major workover. But every year there's going to be little twerks, right? There's going to be – or tweaks, rather. There's going to be a little additions that they might add. They have a new bell and whistle. So same thing is with financial services. You know, products that first started coming out 30 years ago or 20 years ago or maybe only 10 years ago, every year each one of those companies is going to try and find a way to improve them, because it is such a very competitive market. And since I'm able to use any company that I want, we pride ourselves on keeping up with all these new additions as they come out, and make sure that that's something that's relayed over to our clients. And that comes back to our reviews. So we might sit down with a client that we started a contract with 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. I'll use annuities as an example. Annuities have changed dramatically over the past 10 years. You know, there was a lot of pushback years ago that they were very, very expensive, although those expenses were because of benefits that were added that you don't get anywhere else. And I think the insurance industry saw that and they listened, and now you have annuities that have zero internal cost whatsoever. And those are things that weren't available, you know, in the 90s. So you're looking to sit down with clients that might have old contracts because they don't know about new features and new products that are out. So that's, like I said, one of the advantages that we have to not being handcuffed, I guess is maybe the best word to use, to any one company, because we can work with whoever we want. So it definitely gives us a distinct advantage there.
So it sounds like your vision of being a teacher, you technically never abandoned it. It just wasn't exactly the way you anticipated, like in a university.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I still have a passion for history. I love reading historical fiction and watching shows and movies that have some kind of a historical context, especially the ancient world and the Middle Ages. But, you're absolutely right. Now I'm teaching people how to save for the future, how to protect their families. You know, we're going through the various points of their financial life, whether it's the protection phase in the beginning or the accumulation phase where, you know, you're saving for your own retirement, you're saving for your kids for college, you're saving for whatever that big goal is that you have. And then the distribution phase, it's retirement. It's like, okay, we saved up all this money. We protected our assets and our family over these years. Now, what's the most prudent way to use this to kind of live out our golden years the way that we planned on it? So it really does come back to teaching, and you're right. I am still teaching, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I'll tell you what, my grandmother used to say a line that I've never forgotten. She said, "Man plans and God laughs." And there's some truth to that, at least in my own life, because I had all these plans on teaching history for the rest of my life, and having my summers off and traveling. Now that's my life's gone in a very different direction, and I couldn't be happier about it. I mean, I absolutely love what I do. I love the teaching aspect. Like I said, I love meeting different people, building up these relationships and these friendships, and along the way, you know, helping people to live a financially stress-free or at least as much as possible life. You know, and that's an enormous portion of someone's stress is often tied to their finances and their future. You know, something as simple as a life insurance policy. You know, how many parents are worried about what would happen to their kids or their spouse if something, you know, they got hit by a truck on their way home from work. Life insurance to me is one of the most important aspects of financial planning, and it's one of the easiest things to do. And it blows my mind how many people don't have a life insurance contract on themselves. Same thing in saving for their own retirement. You know, so many people put it off. And they feel like they have to start with some kind of big lump sum. But the thing about finance, I'll tell you that it really comes down more to the compounding growth over time. So you can start with whatever you can afford now, but the key is to start as early as possible.
Interesting. And so, in speaking of wanting to be a university professor, I have two thoughts. One is, you know, it sounds like part of what you're teaching is financial literacy. You know, some of your clients are more, as I said, more savvy than others. But you also have clients that have children. Do your clients sort of turn you loose, for lack of better words, on their children to educate them about finances for the future?
Yeah, so that's kind of maybe there's a two-pronged answer to that. So the first part is one thing I've always been happy to do with any one of my clients is to show them that I practice what I preach. So I'm a father. I have a beautiful, beautiful four-year-old daughter. And I'll tell them, listen, when we're talking about planning for your own child's future, I'll show you exactly what I'm doing, right? So I believe in full transparency. Let me show you what I'm doing for my own daughter. You know, the numbers don't have to be involved, but the advantages to different strategies. You know, do you want to have money tied up in a 529 with the advantages that it has, or do you not? Do you want to have insurance on your child, or does that make you uncomfortable? There's lots of different ways that you can set things up for your children that will help them in the future. And I'll show my clients exactly what I've done for my own daughter. Like I said, I practice what I preach. The second part of that answer is, once again, keeping in mind that this is a long-term process, that, you know, these relationships, as far as I'm concerned, once I have a client, they're a client of mine for life. As their children are growing up and they're seeing what their parents did for them, as their children age, now they can become clients and I can help them the same way I help their parents. I'm 37. I have been working on my practice for the better part of a decade at this point, but I still have a long career ahead of me. So that client that's in their 60s, 70s, or 80s, whose children are, you know, 20, 25 years younger than that, the children can become clients and maybe even the grandchildren. And I think it's really important to set an example for your children and your grandchildren in all aspects of your life, and certainly with financial literacy.
Very good. And, you know, that what you just said is a great segue, you know, so talking to your clients about what you actually do with your daughter. And so that gets us to the second question, which is, you were a client first. So is there a big difference in being a client and then being the service provider?
I think so. I think it comes back to just being aware and conscious of practices that I learned from my advisor. You know, I'll tell you what, the guy who was my advisor before I started my practice was right around the same age as my dad. And for at least the first year, and I actually ended up working with him for the first couple of years of my career. We worked in the same firm together. You know, so he was an early mentor to me. And just like I think children do with their own parents, as you age, you know, you should learn from your parents both the positive things and the negative things. So, yeah, I do think I have kind of a unique experience, because I can look and see, once again, what part of his relationship with me as an advisor and client did I appreciate? You know, he was a very friendly guy. He was a very passionate guy. I should say is. He isn't dead. And, we still talk all the time. Our careers have gone in different directions, but there was a lot that I learned from him. And there was other parts of how I run my practice that I learned, not that he ever did anything wrong, but just, you know, you look at things, you tweak them, say, well, maybe I'd do it a little bit differently. But once again, all thinking along the lines of, you know, when I was sitting on the other side of the table, how did I feel about things? Did I ever feel like I was being sold something? You know, the accounts that I started with him when I was just a client, are they accounts that I'm happy that I have now? You know, it definitely is a different way of looking at things when you have perspective from both sides.
So that's helped you be more insightful and I would say maybe more compassionate with your clients.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I can't stress enough how important it is for clients to be comfortable with you. Now, I'm not going to ever say that one industry is more important than another's. I'm not going to say that my job is more important than anyone else's. But when I'm sitting down with a client, we're talking about, you know, pretty personal stuff. You know, we're talking about their life savings or what their family is worth and things also that are near and dear to their hearts. We're talking about where they see themselves in the next 5 years, 10 years, what their dreams are. Do they want to start their own business? Do they have a business that they want to expand? So it becomes a very intimate thing, and not every other industry has that experience with their clients. So I think it is really so important to make sure that there is a very high degree of trust with the client. And that starts with just being as honest and as transparent with the clients as possible and making sure they never feel like they're, you know, being sold something. Nobody wants that. You know, think about when you're walking down the middle of a mall, although maybe that's kind of an old thing. Malls are not what they used to be. But, you know, you have people that are coming up to sell you something in the middle, and, you know, maybe you're interested, maybe you're not. But it's that feeling of trying to be sold something. That's, I never want my clients to feel that way. I want them to feel like I can set them up with anything that they want, but I want them to understand what they're getting themselves into, and I want them to have as much knowledge as they possibly can before they sign anything. And I think that's so important. And you know what? At the end of the day, it protects me also, because if a client understands everything, then they're never going to come back and say, well, you never told me this, or I never knew that about that. So there's also the side of just, you know, protecting yourself as an advisor, because, you know, sometimes people try and say, well, you never told me this, you never told me that. So, no, if everything is documented and you make sure that they understand every aspect of the product, they never have to worry about that either.
Just out of curiosity, is there a criteria you have for someone to qualify as a client? I mean, some people say, you know, you have to have a net worth of $10 million. I hear all kinds of numbers. Do you have one?
No, I don't. I mean, maybe it's easy for me to say this now. I don't think I ever will. So once again, let me use the partners at my firm as an example. Two out of the three of them, like I said before, have started their practices in the 80s. And at this point, they have, you know, their practices are more than 30 years old. They're very, very successful. I look at them and the way that they treat people, which is with, I mean, so much humanity and compassion, and they'll never turn anybody away. Now, that's not the way it is across the industry. I know from experience that there absolutely are advisors that, you know, have those parameters, have to be said. If you don't have X amount of investable assets, they won't even work with you. And, I mean, listen, good for them. If they're making that much money that they can turn business away, God bless. I also know for a fact that that is a very, very, very small percentage of financial advisors in the United States can do that. More often, it's actually, you'll see that that's actually coming from whatever company they work for. You might see that in a bank where, you know, if they have an advisor in the bank, it's not even coming from the advisor himself. It's coming from the bank that they're not really interested in less than, you know, once again, a threshold of investable assets. But long story short, no, and I don't think I ever will. If somebody needs help, you know, they want to learn more about things, I'm very, very happy to take an hour or so, sit down with them, go over, you know, what they might need, what might be the best direction for them to go, where they should start, and go from there. And here's another thing, too. I'll tell you what, I've gotten business from clients that were teeny, teeny, tiny clients that referred business to me that ended up being, you know, very, very large pieces of business. And those were clients I would have never had if I hadn't taken the time to sit down with the original client who just did something very small. Maybe he didn't even make any money off it at all. Maybe it was something where, you know, I just spent time with them and didn't make a dollar. But a year later, 2 years later, whatever it is, you know, when you do good things, good things tend to come back to you. And I think that's an important thing to remember also. So long answer to a short question. No, I do not have any criteria, you know, standards that clients need to meet.
And I think you raised something that's really important, and it can't be emphasized more, especially when your business depends on word of mouth. So you talked about a client that you may have made a very small amount of money by servicing them, except they made introductions. And you could say, one client, maybe you make $100 from them, and they introduce you to someone, and you make $20,000, and that person introduces you to someone who makes $50,000, except it all happened from that first person, and you only made $100. So in a way, the value of that client is worth as much as all three of the clients put together. Do you look at your clients the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. That's my point precisely. I mean, and even if you don't make any money off the client, there also is value in helping somebody else and teaching them. I feel like financial literacy is something that the basics of which should be taught in school, and they aren't, you know. Not that we need to learn how to balance a checkbook anymore, because who has a checkbook anymore? Everything's done digitally.
Right, right.
You know, the basic life skills that we should have learned in high school, like how to change a tire or how to treat somebody in the food and beverage industry, you know, how to tip correctly, things like that. You know, they're not always taught in school, and financial literacy rarely is. So even if that hour and a half of my time was just educating someone and I never get anything back from it, the value is not always seen in dollars and cents. Sometimes just improving someone else's life, giving a little bit of advice that goes a long way, there's a ton of value in that.
Okay. You know, you said something that struck a thought in my head. So you said people don't use checkbooks generally any longer. So, you know, the technology, we're in a new paradigm. So speaking of new paradigms, did COVID have that kind of impact on your industry?
Oh, absolutely. So February of 2020, the market was at an all-time high, stock market. A month later, it had dipped by 30%, almost a full third. I saw a month's worth of appointments call to cancel or reschedule in the span of a week. And it was definitely hit the financial services industry pretty hard. And then moving forward after that, you know, the limitations on meeting with people. I mean, prior to COVID, while obviously Zoom and the other Zoom lookalikes were an option, I would say that the majority of people, and certainly people, let's say 50 and up, were not used to integrating Zoom into their regular life. That has changed. A lot of people are used to Zoom now because they've kind of been forced to. And when I'm having an appointment with a client and talking about, you know, really important aspects of their financial life, a lot of times a phone call just doesn't do it. But when meeting in person was no longer an option, or a limited option, then Zoom became kind of the next best thing. And one, I guess, positive I would say out of COVID is so many more people are used to using Zoom or some other kind of digital appointment making, and it's definitely helped things. You know, so my office is in Port Jeff, on the North Shore of Long Island, but I have clients as far east as Southampton or East Hampton, and clients as far west as the city. So if they're going to come see me, that takes up their whole day. Or if I'm going to go see them, that takes up my whole day. Whereas a Zoom appointment has made things, you know, so much easier. Once again, Zoom's been around for a while, but not everyone has been used to using it. And COVID kind of forced people to become used to it and more comfortable with it. So, yeah, that's one thing. And I will say that while that is a positive, definitely a negative was – It just like every other industry, financial services saw everybody working from home. So processing business took a lot longer, and we still haven't fully recovered from it. You know, I mean, I call various insurance and investment companies throughout the course of the day, and so many of them have changed the little message that you hear for them to say, hey, listen, don't be surprised if you hear a baby crying in the background or a dog barking because so many people are working from home. And that's their regular automated message. And that's become the norm because so many people had to work from home. So I will say that, you know, it definitely slowed down the processing of business. But, yeah, it was – COVID has made things very, very challenging. But one of the aspects of the way I set up my planning is to prepare for when the market is down. So while some advisors are always going to look at – what kind of return they can get their clients. A big portion of my clients, I'm looking at how I can protect their assets. And while some of the business ran away during COVID because the market was down, even though it came all the way back and then finished the year up, it also generated business because more people were looking at, okay, how can I protect my assets and still have the opportunity to get some kind of a decent gain in the market, you know, while the market is up, but have protection when the market is down simultaneously. So my firm is able to use products that give you the best of both worlds. You know, you can participate in gains when the market's up. You have protection when the market is down. So it was kind of a two-edged sword.
Okay. So have any new products come out as a result of COVID?
They are more in the works. So I will say that you will see some things come out, but it takes a long time for products to be approved. And we're living in New York State. New York State specifically is how can I put this delicately? They are famous for dragging their feet on approving new products. There's a lot of times we'll be sitting down with clients, and if we hear that they have a house outside of, you know, home outside of New York State, then it gives us an opportunity to show them other products because the options available in New York State are much less than you'd see in almost any one of the other 49 states. So my answer is you may see products that have come out as a result of COVID, but they might come out, you know, years later just because it takes so long for everything to become approved. You might not even realize that they were a result of COVID.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
I'll give you an example.
Go ahead.
So the buffered annuities that are available throughout the entire country, they've become very, very popular. I've kind of hinted at them earlier. They have they give you the opportunity to realize gains when the market is up, but they also give you a level of protection when the market is down, and they have either zero internal costs, depending on which company you go with, or very minimal costs. Across the country, almost every major insurance company either already offers a version of that product. They have one in the works that will be available in the next year. In New York State, there's only three companies that have them approved. So it's, you know, it kind of just goes to my point that I love this state. I love living on the East End of Long Island, and New York is a great state, but they are very, very picky and slow to allow new products to become available.
Okay.
So,
Lori,
I'm going to Yeah, I was going to ask if you do, like everyone's talking about Bitcoin, Zanabe, and, you know, Mark Cuban invested. So do you get into that? What are your, I mean, always interesting to pick your brain, right? So what are your thoughts on that?
I've been waiting for this question, actually.
Yeah. I had to ask.
So one thing that, you know, to remain as on the up and up as possible is anybody that has their securities licenses understands that we have to abide by the rules set up by the SEC and FINRA. And one of the attractive features of cryptocurrency is that it's not regulated. Well, because it's not regulated, we are not allowed to set it up with clients. So, I mean, there's a new ETF that now includes various forms of cryptocurrency. But from an official standpoint, you know, it's not something I deal with my clients. I don't integrate it into the portfolios that I set up for them. It's not even an option. So if I sat down with you and we were looking at, you know, let's go back to the example of an annuity. There's lots of different mutual fund options inside that annuity. It's not going to have currently any cryptocurrency funds available because they're still so new. And each government is trying to figure out how to regulate them, how they can tax them, how they can track them. And until that is really figured out, then, you know, it's going to be difficult for mainstream financial advisors that are abiding by all the rules to help their clients set it up. I mean, listen, I'll always give people opinions on things. To me, crypto right now, well, certainly there is value in it, is, you know, it's the newest trend. It's, I kind of sort of related to the tech stocks of the 90s. You know, it's something where you can make an absurd amount of money and you can lose an absurd amount of money. There is a tremendous amount of volatility there. So I'm going to keep my answer as vanilla as possible because, once again, it's not fully regulated by the SEC and FINRA yet. And until it is, it's not something that I can really set my clients up with. Once it becomes regulated, once it becomes an option, then absolutely I will integrate it into the plans for my clients. But once again, it will have to be done in a way that they understand what allocation that belongs. You know, that's something that would fall into the more aggressive side of a portfolio. They have to understand that there are certainly, you know, a good amount of possibilities for loss there. Volatility is something that is seen across the market in all different kinds of investments. There's just some areas where it's a little crazier than others.
Do you think it will be regular?
What was that?
Say that again, Lori.
No, I said and crypto for sure. And then you said, do you think?
Well, I was trying to get a sense of FINRA and the SEC. Do you think they will approve it?
Yeah, like I said, there's already an ETF that has crypto in it. It's something that I think, you know, listen, there's a tremendous market for it. That's obvious to everybody. It's something that's catching the imagination of the casual investor. And everyone's going to want to maximize on that interest. You know, so the various governments are going to need to find a way to regulate it so they can tax the gains and you know, the different ways that people trade currency. So, yes, I think that eventually it will be. We're already seeing a lot of moves being made in that direction. Maybe they're being made faster than normally they would because this is something that the industry hasn't seen. You know, this new form of currency, this new form of investment that kind of breaks a lot of the old standards and the old molds of what an investment can be or what it can do. I think that you will see it added to mainstream investments. You'll see it added to portfolios. I just, you know, when is it going to be fully integrated into our portfolios? That I'm not sure. But I would say sooner rather than later.
Okay, so it sounds like I'll ask you, do you think crypto is here to stay? And is it really an investment strategy to add to a portfolio? So two questions. Is it here to stay?
I have to emphasize that I am by no stretch of the imagination an expert on crypto, because once again, it's not something that I can right now set up for my clients. So this is more on a personal side. Do I think it's here to stay? Yeah, probably. I think that our lives are going more and more digital. I don't think that's any kind of a stretch to make that statement. We're going closer and closer to a cashless society, which is kind of strange. So think about things this way. Years ago, when you'd go out to dinner, what percentage of people paid the early 90s, early to mid-90s. What percentage of people paid with a credit card as opposed to paid with cash? I'd say easily the majority of people paid with cash. Nowadays, and you can see this by going to any merchant, any restaurant, what percentage of their sales are in credit cards? I mean, it's easily 75%, easily 75%. And you've seen a rise in merchant processing because of it, and this whole cash discount program where now the customer has to pay for the transaction. They call it a cash discount because, hey, it's the price is this, but if you pay with a card, it's 4% more. So my whole point is we're going closer and closer to a fully cashless society, and I think crypto is just going to help that because now you have another currency that you can use to pay for things. So do I think it's here to stay? Yeah, in the form that it is now, who knows? Things can change. Things change all the time. The way that it looks now might be very different than the way that it looks in 20 years, but I do think that some form of a cryptocurrency will probably be something that we're using just as much, if not the only thing that we're using at some point in the future. And because of that, yes, I think it will be something that is added into the way we invest.
Interesting. American Express didn't have a credit card until 1959. So that's not very far from the 1990s. Interesting.
Listen, technology, we're not saying anything new here. I'm 37 years old, and I saw something online, maybe it was 2 weeks ago. It was a picture of a 3.5 or one of those old 3x5 floppy disks that we used to save things on our computers in the 90s.
Right.
And there was someone in their 20s, right? Not that much younger than me. I mean, 15 years younger than me. They had no idea what it was. No idea. And then take it a step further than that, the ones that we were using before the little 3x5s, the 5x8s, the really, really thin ones that, we called the 3x5s floppy disks, but the older ones were even, they were actually very floppy. Those are the ones that you used more in the 80s. They have no idea what that is. With CD-ROM. CD-ROM wasn't that long ago. Here, I'll really make you laugh. I remember going to PC Richards with my parents in the late 80s. We were buying our first family computer. Keep in mind, this is only 30 years ago. It was not that long ago. The salesperson at PC Richards told my parents, as he was showing them various machines, one of the ones that he was showing them had Windows 3.1. Way before Windows 95, 98, whatever. Now we're up to Windows 11 or whatever it is. And he told them that, listen, I don't really know if you need to get it with Windows. I don't know if this Windows thing is going to last. You can just get a regular computer that runs on DOS. Yeah, exactly. And nobody even knows what DOS is now, unless you're actually a tech person. Nobody knows what DOS is. It wasn't that long ago. 30 years ago, and this guy was telling me, I don't know if Windows is, this is a new thing. I don't know if it's going to last.
Right. So and now we're about Windows 11, 12, 20-something.
Yeah. Windows 11, yeah. And, running an operating or running a computer without an operating system was something we did all the time back then.
Right, right. That's very funny. Yes, we have come a long way, huh? Yeah. So we're coming to a close. Any words of wisdom you'd like to give to our listeners when it comes to financial literacy?
I mean, listen, find somebody that you're comfortable with. I can't emphasize the comfort part. Somebody that is going to show you how things work, someone that will take the time to hold your hand and spend the time with you. And once again, somebody that is competent and somebody that is, that's worth spending your time with, because this is a big part of your life. And probably the biggest piece of advice I can give people is don't wait. You know, it's something that people put on their back burner, and I don't really understand why. But I'll get around to setting up my retirement planning, or I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with somebody and they're in their 50s and they're just starting to save for their retirement, right? Or they have very small accounts because they've only been saving for a handful of years. And they'll say, yeah, you know, this is something you should have done 20 years ago. And I'll never make them feel bad about it. But the people in their 20s and 30s should be focused on saving something now. It doesn't have to be that much. Just save whatever you can. Sit down with somebody that's going to spend the time with you. Put a plan together, a plan that they understand can be changed every single year, because your life is going to change every single year. But get started as soon as possible, because you'll be amazed 20 years down the line, 25 years down the line, 30 years down the line, that extra $100 a week or whatever it was that you started putting aside, it grows, and it grows exponentially, and it can make a really, really big difference in your life in your 50s and 60s if you start on the earlier side. You know, it's something that we've learned in so many different conferences as advisors, and the value of time. That's spoken about in so many different parts of our life, but certainly in the financial side of your life, how important time is. You can't get it back. So start as early as possible with whatever you can afford. And another thing that I stress to my clients, I'll never be the guy that sits down with you and says, listen, let's go through what you're spending. Where are you spending more money than you should? I'll never be the person that says you should stop doing all the fun stuff and save everything, because you have to be able to live your life too, right? You're never going to be 35 again. You're never going to be 45 again. You're never going to be 55 again. So there has to be balance. There has to be balance in every part of your life. You have to be able to enjoy your life along the way. But having said that, you have to be prudent with your money and prudent with your time, and setting something aside as early as possible is so, so important.
Very good. And if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, so the best way is just to look on our website. The website is www.hhfa.org, instead of .com, stands for Heritage Harbor Financial Associates. And you can click on the associates there. You'll see every member of the team, and you'll see my profile on there. So I do consultations with people all the time. I don't charge for a consultation. So give me a call. You don't have to live on Long Island. We can work with anybody in the United States. So feel free to reach out, ask questions. That's what I'm here for.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, John. What very informational.
Thanks
and
so much for having me.
And
I really
thank you
appreciate
for teaching
it.
Us.
Okay.
This is really great.
Class.
Tune in.
Yeah.
Right. So tune in next week, everyone, and we'll see you next week. And thank you again, John.
Thanks
a lot, John. Yep, our pleasure to have you here. Thanks to the listeners. Everyone have a great evening. Take care and good night.